Now, PW Torch brings you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Monday Night Raw.
All right, Jason, let's start with your thoughts on Paul Heyman's rebuttal just moments ago to the much talked about, buzzworthy, I think effective Roman Reigns promo from last week on Raw. Did Heyman properly respond to what Roman had to say to build a WrestleMania match and keep things on course for building anticipation for that match?
Sure, got a lot of bitching tonight, don't you think? The title's a bitch. Brock Lesnar's a bitch. I mean, how many things are bitches? But besides that, I thought Paul Heyman did a good job putting over the importance of the championship. And then I liked it when Roman Reigns came out and he told him, I want you to pick up that title, as if to say, give it the respect it deserves. So I like that they ultimately put over the title. Now, do I believe that Paul Heyman did a good job defending Brock Lesnar? No, I don't think he did. But then again, you know, this is a storyline where I'm meant to jump on board with Roman Reigns, who's meant to be my voice, because I'm complaining that Brock Lesnar isn't there as much as what he should be, when in actual fact, the reality is Brock Lesnar signed a contract that any person, any sane person would sign. Part-time work for big-time money. So I fail to knock Brock Lesnar for that. Having said all that, I am intrigued to see where they go next week. I'm looking forward to it. I thought Reigns' rebuttal was short and sharp to what Paul Heyman had to say. Ultimately, though, I think this week was about putting over the championship and its importance. And also, Wade, if you note, Paul Heyman went out there and for the first time in a long time addressed the crowd and said, look, your opinion's irrelevant. I don't really care. So clearly Brock Lesnar's been playing his tweener role back and forth for quite a few months now. But tonight it was established he is the heel.
Do you like that WWE is trying to, well, succeeding, I would probably argue at this point, in framing Roman Reigns as the babyface and Brock Lesnar as the heel? 2 weeks ago, did you see a path to that, and would you have thought it was prudent to try, and how do you think they're doing so far? So kind of a three-part question there.
Here's the way that I see it. Roman Reigns is not going to get the people that boo him passionately to cheer him. What might happen, though, is that the people who boo him passionately might not boo him as much. They might think to themselves, you know what, Roman's bringing up a few points here. I never really thought about it. And maybe Brock Lesnar, with this part-time work he's doing, yes, I don't really appreciate that, and there should be more people deserving. So perhaps the passion of the boos might decrease. And maybe WWE's plan is that if we can get the hardcore fans that dislike Roman to not dislike him as much, when the other crowd cheers, we can push the fader up on those cheers and make it seem like to the people at home, hey, they're unanimously cheering for Roman Reigns, which sort of goes against what they've always taught us, which is it's not really whether you get booed or cheers, it's how much noise the crowds make. We all know they're full of crap about that. Besides that, putting Roman Reigns and positioning him as the voice of the fans who dislike Brock Lesnar for taking on this part-time work and only rocking up when he feels like it, I have to admit, I think it's a very sound approach. I think it's their best bet to decrease the negativity on Reigns. Will it have people cheering him, though? Will it turn the people who boo him to cheers? I doubt that, but this could be counted as somewhat as a win.
I'm with you on everything, Jason. I would like to be able to we'll disagree on something, I'm sure, in this program, but I'm with you. I didn't think that in 2 weeks or two shows they could get Roman in a position where I thought that fans who love and respect what Heyman and Lesnar stand for and represent to second guess that as they decide to play into and immerse themselves in the WrestleMania storyline. And to have Roman Reigns, who's been criticized and seen as the guy who, through family connections and fitting Vince McMahon's profile for what a sports entertainer should look like, got a leg up on Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose, and was the weak link in the Shield who was carried but got the biggest push coming out of it. He's the one who CM Punk was told to make look good. He's the one who said, I do what I'm told and hope to get rich, and I'm 1,000 times better, and if you don't think so, you're crazy. And other foot-in-the-mouth moments in mainstream media interviews, that guy was in trouble with a big part of the fan base, and being able to flip that around through a single Brock no-show And to say what Roman said and to position him, I think, successfully with a yet-to-be-determined, as you talk about, to a yet-to-be-determined degree with a yet-to-be-determined percentage of the fan base, but I think a more sizable one than I would have forecast 2 weeks ago, is already a success. And here's the key. Roman had to deliver. He had to be believable. And once again, this week, it was short and sweet. He didn't overstay his welcome. They did say bitch too much, but it was another good, believable, earnest delivery from Roman. And I like the line. And again, this is how WWE promotes brand first, even before wrestlers. This is Roman is taking advantage of WWE spending years getting their brand over even more than their wrestlers in certain respects, a very concerted effort. And for him to say it's not just about showing up and being a champion who shows up, it's about wanting to be here when you do show up. And I think WWE has a fan base right now that does value a lot right now, more than the wrestler is cool, a wrestler being loyal to the brand and largely, in a larger sense, loyal to professional wrestling. So to play off of, and that it only works in certain circumstances. You got to play your cards right and it can backfire. But Roman has been effective at delivering that message more than I thought he could be. And I think they get credit for that. I don't know that it turns things around the day after WrestleMania. I don't know that this makes Roman a hero to the fans who the adult male audience who had been booing him. But this, I think, is the best path that they could have created for themselves to maybe chip away at what you rightfully point out, Jason, is something that bothers them despite paying lip service to the fact that all they care about is any reaction. They don't. They want Roman over as a babyface, especially at WrestleMania in front of all the corporate sponsors and all the mainstream media. They don't want the story to be, why did that guy who's supposed to be the good guy who won the championship, why did the crowd boo him? I thought Vince McMahon had his finger on the pulse of his fan base. So this, I think, is a mission that they're on, and I think this week was another step in that direction. I thought Paul Heyman did a nice job in saying, your biggest win ever was against Undertaker. And that was his only match that year, and nobody talked about it. And they shouldn't have talked about it, because that'd be BS, just like it's BS to say that it matters how often Brock wrestles. Because, in fairness to Brock, he is Brock freaking Lesnar, and he's an NCAA champion, a UFC champion, a hell of a professional wrestler, by the way, an underrated promo, which we might never get to see again. Maybe next week we will. And he has earned the right to be a part-time guy, and he has the right to, in real life, show up when he's paid and not be strong-armed or guilt-tripped into taking more dates at the last second if WWE used up their dates, or to apologize for the leverage that he had to get a deal that both sides agreed to. So in real life, it's a farce to be critical of Brock, but storyline-wise, it's a pretty effective card to play. WWE's playing it well. Jason, any reaction to any of that?
Yeah, and like I said, just look at the language. You know, Paul Heyman straight away sort of attacking the crowd, saying your irrelevant opinion. He hasn't attacked a crowd in quite a while. And you look at Roman Reigns using the language, all we want. Now, that's the first time in a long time. I don't know if I've ever heard Roman say we, as in him and the fans. And that's always been a criticism you've had of him. He doesn't welcome in the fans. But he said all we want for him is to show up to work. So he's trying to be the voice of the fans who are complaining about Lesnar only rocking up when he feels like it. And then Heyman really emphasizing next week, as if to say you're not getting him now. Now, when he said the whole thing about The Undertaker 365 days a year, and so is Brock Lesnar, that to me sounds like a clever line, but it sort of isn't, because what are you trying to say? That Seth Rollins is a Seth Rollins 365 days a year, Finn Balor, everyone else. I mean, what does that actually mean? I mean, you are who you are 365 days a year. That doesn't, to me, make it better that you're only a part-time person. So I think you sort of put that line in as if to try and save that particular argument that he was talking about. But nevertheless, I thought they did a good enough job. I actually would like to see Roman take it up to more to the mic on Paul Heyman, not necessarily Lesnar. I would like to see him attack Heyman personally on the mic, maybe call him out for some hypocrisy, because I think what's going to get Reigns over more as far as adding another depth and adding another layer to his character is saying these things that a lot of fans don't think he had it in him. like last week, I think he caught a lot of fans by surprise, where it's Reigns is bringing up all these things, and it's like, geez, I never thought Roman would think that way, or, yeah, he's actually got a point. The more that he can have the last word, and the more that he can have fans saying, geez, I didn't think Roman thought that way, the better off he'll be for his character and adding more depth, which has always been a criticism of mine with him compared to Rollins and Ambrose, who seem to have that depth. Reigns always seemed to lack that type of depth.
Let's set the table here. I'm Wade Keller, and this is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Monday, March 5th, 2018. We are streaming the color portion of today's program live at wadekellerpodcast.com. I invite all of you who download our show every week, the post-Raw and the post-SmackDown show, to call the show and participate in our conversation that we have right after Raw and SmackDown go off the air. Within 5 minutes of going off the air, we are on the air with a taping of our live caller session. And then the whole podcast becomes downloadable a couple hours later. And you can subscribe to our show by searching Wade Keller in Apple Podcasts or on any app or anywhere that you listen to podcasts. The first two shows during the week are not part of Podcast One. The last two shows that I host that are free during the week are part of Podcast One, the Thursday flagship and Interview Friday. This Thursday, Todd Martin, PW Torch audio analyst. I record a VIP show with him, a VIP exclusive show every Wednesday night. He will be by on the Thursday flagship this week to break down the week in WWE and elsewhere. It's the flagship, so we'll be covering a broad array of topics. And then Interview Friday features part two of my interview with Christian Karloff, who was, I thought, a really cool guest last week. Christian Karloff, a former WWE creative team member back in 2001, for a brief period of time, now part of the Podcast One family of podcast hosts doing a movie podcast. He talked about his experience working for Stephanie McMahon and a topic of today's she'll be a topic of today's show, and also Paul Heyman, along with Bruce Pritchard, Michael Hayes, Brian Gewirtz, and others. Getting a lot of good feedback on this episode. So if you missed that, you've got to subscribe to a separate feed to get those Podcast One shows. Just search Wade Keller and click on the blue logo for the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One, and that'll give you the Thursday and Friday shows. Otherwise, you can also subscribe to the post shows that we do after Raw and SmackDown earlier in the week. That's the red logo, also free to subscribe to. So with that business out of the way, let me introduce my co-host for today, Jason from Australia. He was a longtime and frequent caller of the PW Torch livecast and brought it every week when he was a caller on the show. And by popular demand, we have made him part of the conversation here as a rotating co-host on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. And Jason, it is great to have you back on the show, and I know our listeners are happy to hear your voice again.
I appreciate it, Wade, and I tell you what, I'm excited. They made the announcement tonight. They're going to make it around WrestleMania.
Yes.
WWE are coming for a major pay-per-view in October at the MCG. That's the Melbourne Cricket Ground. Now, the MCG's been around for over 150 years, and they bring over some top talent in October. It's good weather. They could pack out that stadium, fingers crossed.
I'm excited about that, and they also broke news today. They're coming to Saudi Arabia next month for the 50-person Royal Rumble, the biggest Royal Rumble of all time, giving something, a kind of a signature match to that international event. So WWE continuing to establish its brand as international in scope, and certainly these two big stadium shows are part of that. Jason, definitely we're going to have time to talk about Stephanie and Ronda and Hunter and Angle and other WrestleMania developments, Braun and Elias, and then John Cena with his impassioned promo along with the Goldust angle. And I would not have – would you have bet that Goldust and John Cena had never wrestled?
Yeah, that took me by surprise.
Yeah.
Really, John Cena, Goldust never had crossed paths. I mean, well, Cena came in, around about 2002 – Goldust, I mean, he came back to WWE. You would have thought that would have crossed paths sometime.
Yeah, I would have too, at least at a house show or something. So, well, we'll talk about that later. But we got some people on hold, and if you want to join them and get in line on the phone banks, our phone number is 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. Push 1 on your keypad if you would like to participate in the show. Otherwise, you stay in the background as just an eavesdropper, which you are welcome to do. But if you are interested in participating, you definitely have to push 1. 270. You're the first caller of our caller session here. What is on your mind tonight?
What's up, guys? This is Zach from Kentucky. I just wanted to point out that when Elias was doing his big escape gimmick tonight, that there wasn't any cameras in the car, just the one following him.
I liked it, yes. You know, and I was ready to be critical that there was a camera waiting in the parking garage. You know, it's like, and it was, it's not as bad. Like, it's, you know, 2 out of 10 compared to a 10 out of 10 with, you know, the dash cam with Shane and all that. But then it made sense. Braun had beat him out there. You know, because Braun runs fast. So Braun certainly saw what Elias was doing. He saw he was trying to escape. Braun's really fast, so he got out there, and a camera guy followed Braun, because, of course, roving cameras follow wrestlers where the action is. To me, that's enough. You know, you gave me enough to believe that's why a camera would be there. And so it worked for me. And, yeah, I mean, I thought that played out, you know, pretty well. I mean, you got to allow a little creative license with Braun and Elias at this point, given the tone of Braun's character. And you can agree or disagree with that tone, but factually speaking, that is the tone. And so you're going to get a little bit of cheesiness to some of what he is doing. Zach, I'll go back to you in a second, but Jason, what do you think of the camera work specifically, as Zach brings up, and more broadly what they did with Braun and Elias?
Yeah, well, I think, Zach, you raised a really good point, because I was waiting for the camera to be embedded in the rear view mirror. I was waiting for that. I go, here we go. He's going to look. We're going to see Braun. And yeah, now maybe the deal was they're backstage and I was saying, look, Vince, we can't go with the camera. It looks ridiculous. And he's like, okay, we won't have the camera in the car, but I need the words on Braun's promo. You need to give me those words. So maybe, unfortunately, that was a trade-off.
You know, this is a good transition. Zach, hold on. I did put a poll up on my Twitter feed. Follow us at PW Torch and follow me at The Wade Keller. At PW Torch tonight, I said, how do you feel about WWE's promos with big words on the screen matching what wrestlers are saying? And we have 85% thumbs down and 15% thumbs up. Breaking it down even more, 53% hate it, maybe a lot. They chose that option. The second option of a thumbs down was, it's stupid, but whatever. So, you know, not in favor of it, but kind of a shoulder shrug. So 53% hate it, 32% it's stupid, but whatever. 11% say it's okay, no big deal. 4%, a mere 4% out of 398 votes at this point, say, I like it, actually. So that's what that's in. I honestly didn't know, you know, what the response was going to be. That would have been my guess, but I didn't know. I had to run the poll to find out if I was making a bigger deal out of it than most people. And, you know, I know that, you know, it kind of looks like different things on the internet where words are put on GIFs and social media and stuff. And I thought, well, I don't know, maybe some, no, people who follow us, at least on Twitter, overwhelmingly negative on it. Zach, what else do you have for us?
Well, I was just adding to what you said there. Now, the words on the screen, I saw some big, scary red ones. I don't know if that makes a difference, but, you know. I guess that's all I got, man. Good to talk to you. I enjoyed the show.
I appreciate your economy of words. There's no requirement to take up 3 minutes talking, and you bring up a good point, and I'm glad you did. Hopefully you'll call again.
Thank you.
You bet.
You know, Wade, Zach would be a good emailer to the Todd Martin show, The Fix, because he gets straight to the point. And I know you don't like those people to go on and on. And I've been guilty of that in the past. I've been emailing you for quite a few years, and I would send in novels. I mean novels, and I'd be like, even I've gone too far here, so I can understand the frustration.
I hate to break kayfabe and say it's developed into a bit of a shtick now, but it has. But that said, I do appreciate, you know, an economy of words. But if it means there's a lot of points you have to make in order to ask your question, as long as there's not a lot of wasted words and just eating up time and space, it's okay to be a little longer. But I hate to say that publicly. I have people now like writing like 2-sentence questions and apologizing for the length now. Like, I've got everybody
done. Now you've gone too far.
I know. I feel like I have to pull back.
Everyone's not really, Wade, because when I used to write in, I would ask a question and then answer it, and then it'd be like, okay, well said, Jason, moving on. I just spent 15 minutes writing out this beautiful short story, and then you're just like, okay, we agree. And then I look back and I go, no, wait a minute, I'm the one that's in the wrong here.
Well, one thing I never want to happen is I never want someone to transcribe my questions to my guests and then throw that at me because I think hashtag hypocrisy would pop up on the Torch screen if that occurred. All right. Thank you, Zach. Now let's go to our next caller. We have Skyper International 111. If you heard a little touch tone, it's you. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
My name is Craig from Toledo.
Hey, Craig. Thanks for calling. What have you got for us?
I love hearing Jason. It's a shout out to the old days. Thankfully, you guys have you have him back on the show now.
He never left.
I was calling about the subtleties of the subtleties of the show tonight, and it's been over the past couple weeks of Raw, the Ronda truncated drum roll part and the Nia the soft tap on the tap out and her tears, and even the Matt Hardy the Matt Hardy teaser and Roman's body language, all these little subtleties. Everything tonight seemed like it was something you had to pay attention to. Do you think this is a focus, overall with the that they're in the production, or do you think that everyone's just ramping up for WrestleMania? And I'll just thank you for taking me off and love you guys.
Really good topic. Jason, are you noticing what Craig is noticing, that some of the subtleties are being cleaned up and that there's more of them worth paying attention to?
Yeah, well, first of all, Craig, thank you very much for the compliment. Good hearing from you. Yeah, I think this is something, but they sort of pick and choose their spots. I noticed with Kurt Angle's promo tonight, he said to Triple H, I told you after the Survivor Series, once again, referring back to a past incident. And I feel like they've been doing that more often, referencing past pay-per-views and referencing things in the past. And I think the more they do that, the more they reward long-term viewers, the better, because we'll be paying attention to a lot more. But I do see what Craig was saying, especially with the tap out with Nia Jax, the little tap out there. And with the drum roll, I thought, and I was perfectly okay with this, I thought Ronda may have missed her cue. She might have come in just a tad early. But, in a real way, she's not really waiting for that drum roll just because Steph said it. She wants to step in and make her challenge there and then. So, for some people that might have thought she may have missed her cue, I thought it was perfectly okay.
Yeah, you stole my follow-up question, because I was going to ask about that and say, do you think that really was a clever, sophisticated subtlety that was planned? Because Ronda so far... I'll cite another poll I put up on Twitter tonight at PW Torch. I said, how is WWE doing with Ronda Rousey so far, including Triple H and Stephanie Angles on TV? Over 500 votes in, 19% say great so far, 48% say pretty good. So that's 67% giving it a thumbs up. 21% say barely okay, and 12% say it's been bad. I think that's fair. I think depending on what you focus on and what you're looking for, people can see the same thing and the same strengths and weaknesses in a segment and agree on that, but just feel that certain things are more important than others. So you can see a segment the same way and fairly, but simply think, well, that weakness isn't important and this weakness is, or that strength overrides something that wasn't as important. I hate to be the one who created the poll and then to not choose one or option or the other, because I think it's been more than pretty good, but not quite great. So if I had to pick, I probably would go with great so far, with some reservations. But my reservations are the quirkiness of, and this is what I'm getting at when I say I think people see the same thing and they just judge it differently, or judge the importance of it differently, is I think that Ronda is quirky. She does have the three emotions of a toddler, a joy and seething anger. And I don't know what her third look is, blank look or curiosity. I don't know. But she talks too quickly. Like, she jumbles her words together and doesn't emote and doesn't project enough as she talks. And I think that's pretty easily fixable. I think that's nerves and lack of experience. I don't think it's something that can't be helped. So I'm not particularly worried about it, nor do I think it matters a ton right now. But I do think her natural timing, her timing isn't coming as naturally as it does to some people, but I don't think it's a deal killer. It was Nick Aldis, NWA World Heavyweight Champion, on my Interview Friday show at Podcast One a few weeks back, who said that, you know, it's one thing for Ronda to be put in a press conference and sat down and say, talk about your fight, be yourself, and know that all that matters is, you know, you win. Like, you stay a star and you win. In wrestling, as Nick put it, there's dozens of people who have put in dozens of hours to come up with a segment that you then have to play a part in and pull it off, and it's a lot more pressure. And when you take that into consideration, that Ronda became a star because of how unique and quirky her personality was, her toddler march to determined march to the ring, I'm going to win, and then she does, and then she leaves, or when she loses, the agony of defeat. I mean, she exemplified thrill of victory and agony of defeat, but there wasn't a real wide range of emotion that most people saw, and she wasn't asked to do a lot other than, you know, be herself and win quickly. I think at this point, it's been good, and I think Stephanie and Hunter have been fantastic, and I know there are some people who push back on that. I think most people, anecdotally, agree with me that Stephanie is doing great. There's people in the business in wrestling I talk to, current and ex-wrestlers and others, who aren't necessarily even fond of certain aspects of Stephanie and Hunter on a political level, and some who are, by the way. And everybody so far just thinks she has been a star and Hunter has been really, really good. So that's where I just think great so far. Kurt's weaker than Hunter and Stephanie, probably a little better than Ronda, which is faint praise. But I thought tonight was a good night for him. Jason, your take on any or all of that?
Oh, definitely. Look, the thing about Ronda Rousey that she has that not many of the men have and hardly any of the women is she has that look. She has that credibility. I have no issue with her stumbling her words. And to be honest, Wade, I have no issue with wrestlers stumbling over their words here and there. I don't like it when it's too perfect. I like my wrestling a little bit rough around the edges because nobody can speak in a perfect way. I like it when it seems like they're thinking off the top of their head. So when Kurt Angle, he might stumble here and there, it doesn't bother me. I don't need everything to be perfect. So if Ronda misses a cue or sometimes doesn't project into the mic. She did it a lot better last week. I thought her projection into the mic was a lot better than this week. But at the end of the day, what you can't take away from her is that credibility and that look that she has, that when people know when she has that look, she's going to kick someone's ass. And she has that, and not many of the competitors, men or women, do have that. As far as Kurt Angle is concerned, I really like this Kurt Angle. I was afraid we were going to get another 2 to 3 weeks of him being berated, having to beg for his job. Then all of a sudden, he finds himself. We've seen this storyline before with Mick Foley, but it's almost like too much damage is done before you get to the part where they find themselves. But Kurt Angle last week, he took a punch from Triple H. He didn't accept it. He didn't like it. And he issued a challenge. This is the Kurt Angle that I can get behind. Olympic gold medalist. He can kick ass, and despite how old he is, and he may have lost a little bit, he's still very believable. And as far as Triple H and Stephanie is concerned, I'm the first person to pick on Stephanie. I'm always looking to see what she's going to do to undercut someone. But I thought she sold really good tonight, and I thought Triple H's selling of the ankle lock was tremendous. He really sold that ankle lock, and they came out looking like the heels that they should. And Ronda and Kurt got the upper hand. Now, there's going to be some people that are going to say that maybe Ronda did a little bit too much to Steph, but I would argue that for the next 5 weeks, if it's constantly teased that, you know, Ronda's going to do something to Steph, but she doesn't, she comes across like a little bit of a toothless tiger in that you can see that she's waiting for WrestleMania. I have no issue with her getting her licks in now because it makes more sense that she would as opposed to just waiting for Steph to get out of the ring because, well, we can't have any offense because we're waiting for WrestleMania. So I really like tonight's segment. I think it did good for Ronda. I think it did good for Kurt and Stephanie and Triple H were their best at being those heels that are selling for the baby faces.
All right. Well put. Let's take at least one more call here. We've got our on-site correspondent standing by too, which I want to get to before it gets too late. Well, let's go to 803 next. Area code 803. Thanks for calling. Please state your name and where you're calling from.
Yes, this is Joseph from Columbia.
Hey, Joseph. Thanks. Columbia where?
Columbia, South Carolina.
Okay, great. I think there's more than one Columbia, so just checking. Yeah, what's on your mind tonight?
I was just wondering about what you guys thought about how they're booking Asuka. They're 2.5-year undefeated killer. Kind of booking her as an underdog against Nia 2 weeks in a row, having her take, you know, 70% of the offense and then being the scrappy underdog and getting the win in the end. I feel like they could do a little bit more with her, but I was just wondering about you guys' take on that. Thank you.
Yeah.
Thanks, Joseph. No, I'm glad you brought that up, and I'm glad I didn't bring it up yet, and you got a chance to ask that question and phrase it the way that you did. Jason, that is something I've seen some social media reaction to, just keeping an eye on things during Raw. And we might have gotten an email on this, too. It is I want to get your thoughts.
Yes.
Yeah, go ahead first, and then I'll get my thoughts.
Yeah, excellent call, Joseph. I've thought this for a while. I almost feel like this feud with Nia Jax has come at the wrong time for Asuka. I wouldn't mind this if Asuka had the championship, but it's almost like Asuka's gone from Asuka's going to kill you to Asuka's going to find some way to defeat you, which really doesn't have the same ring. Which it doesn't have the same ring to her. Let's be honest. Yeah, I think she's.
I think it's pretty catchy. I'm just going to tell you.
Well, Asuka's going to find a way to beat you.
I'd
love to see the crowd get in sync with that.
I will pop big if in Detroit next week, if someone listening to us can get that started in the crowd, I will pop big.
Yeah, it'd make a great sign. Instead of having the wool with the 17 O's, it could just have a long sign like that. But look, I agree with Joseph. I think Asuka has lost a little bit, and I know they're trying to build Nia. And it appears that Asuka's going to go to SmackDown and challenge Charlotte. So it's more about the streak. Now it's sort of, we've gone from Asuka's going to kill you to now it's about the streak. And with Nia, it obviously looks like they're going to be positioning her with a feud with Alexa Bliss based on tonight. I thought that was well done. But I think Joe's right. Asuka has lost a little bit of that killer instinct. And it's more about her keeping the streak alive and finding a way to win. Now, Wade, I'm no expert on MMA, but just based on your background, when Nia gets put in that armbar, if that was in real life and you're extending the elbow like that, I mean, I don't care how big you are. Shouldn't you be tapping out to that a little bit quicker? I mean, was she in that a little bit too long for, you know, too much of suspension of disbelief?
Yeah. I mean, I'm a little torn because I do understand people want moves in MMA to be sold and have the same effectiveness in pro wrestling. But they don't. And so look at what happens with a back suplex, a German suplex in UFC. It's nobody sells it. It doesn't happen all that often, but when it happens, it's not sold as something that hurts. Pro wrestling just tells stories differently. So the question and the challenge, the conundrum is how do you milk drama out of a submission hold that people have come to expect means tap or snap? And that's what's happening here. And WWE is making a choice. And I don't think it's an unreasonable choice, but it comes with a price. And that is take a move that should be tap quickly or your arm snaps and milk it like they do sleeper holds or other, you know, whatever. Pick your submission hold where there's not that immediate tap out. I'm okay with it because I think it's kind of silly to apply the standard of you have to sell a move realistically how it would feel in real life to pro wrestling when nothing else is done that way. I mean, there's so many gaps.
Especially a punch. I mean, a punch. A punch. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Even punches that don't hit, like Goldust's and Kurt's, and it wasn't a good night for showing light on moves tonight. But I think that I understand if you say, well, the attraction of the move is that it elicits a feeling that somebody's doing a legit hold in the ring. Well, I don't want – it's like my criticism of the CM Punk promo. I don't want one thing to feel real, more real than everything else because it pulls down everything else or it pushes down everything else while it gets yourself over. So I get it's a debatable – I get it's a point some people would disagree with me on. But I understand and I'm sympathetic to the idea of now we need to – we want that drama. We want to milk the moment. We want there to be crawling to the bottom rope. We want there to be – fans on the edge of their seats wondering, is she or isn't she? And you take that away unless the drama is, can she get it applied? Can she get it applied? And that's an alternate approach. I don't think it's that big of a deal either way, but I'm sympathetic to their dilemma and okay with doing it the way that they do it. And obviously, I think your line that the Nia Jax feud is coming at a bad time for Asuka is right. You know, it is either direction they go, it's going to be rough because they chose to do Asuka and Nia Jax, and you can backtrack to the point that they decided that and be critical of it. But once they're on that path, they want to get Nia Jax over, as a babyface who held her own against the undefeated Asuka. And you know, all the subtleties were there to get her over as a babyface tonight, and the not-so-subtleties, the camera 1 inch from her face as she cried and sobbed as Alexa Bliss tore her apart. And I'm not being critical of the segment. I'm just saying that wasn't exactly subtle. But some of the stuff earlier was with her. I think they're trying to tell the story with Nia Jax, and I think they have faith that the undefeated streak is enough. And I think the announcing pays enough tribute to the unbeaten streak, that, and they really, really stress that, that that's still a powerful enough chip to cash in against Ronda Rousey, that having her go up against Nia Jax as competitively as she does is okay. But the key is they have to treat Nia Jax, separate from Asuka, as being really, really good and a level above just about everybody else. Otherwise, by transference, it makes Asuka seem weak. So as long as they push Nia as really strong and she beats Bliss and she becomes a dominant champion for a while, and they should do that because that's another Ronda Rousey opponent down the line, then I'm okay with it.
Yeah, and I think she'll be selling that arm injury for quite a while. And if they go down that path, I'm sure that Bliss will attack it. And, you know, it wouldn't surprise me if she goes into WrestleMania, you know, with a one-arm disadvantage. So it looks like Bliss has more of a chance. Because if you put Nia in the ring with Bliss, I mean, that's 10 seconds that match will be over. So I think that's why they had her really selling that arm injury.
Yep. All right. We're going to stop our caller session here and transition to talking to our on-site correspondent. We got Mitch standing by very patiently for us in Milwaukee. So after this, we'll be by with Mitch from Milwaukee to talk about how the crowd reacted to everything tonight. I'm eager to hear how things went in the building with individual wrestlers, including John Cena, Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, or Brock Lesnar references by Paul Heyman, and if the Nia Jax turn registered with a crowd, and definitely Ronda Rousey, because I think that's an aspect we haven't talked about yet. And there was some mixed signals in terms of how she's getting over. So we'll get Mitch's take after this. All right, we're back and joined by Mitch from Milwaukee, who is on site at Raw tonight. Mitch, thanks for joining us here on the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show.
No problem, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Excellent. Well, how was the attendance tonight in Milwaukee?
I thought it was really good, considering we got about 3 inches of snow outside and some really bad winds. So I'd have to say it was probably, I'd say 14,000 or so. About they had about a fifth of the seats closed off, obviously, by the Tron. And then hard camera side, the upper deck 400 level was tarped off. But that was about it.
And would you say it was an energized crowd and into the product overall?
At points, I feel like the first segment was so good that the next two matches after that might have suffered a little bit because people are still coming down from that. But I think when there were moments for them to be up, they were up for the most part.
Let's talk about that first segment since you brought it up here. Ronda Rousey, how would you describe the crowd reaction towards her? I sensed a little bit of the time that they weren't into her as, oh my God, Ronda Rousey's in the house. And yet then there were chants for Ronda Rousey and they were really into her at other times. And I think most of the time, my sense was she was over with the crowd, but she was kind of earning it.
Yeah, I think you could say that. When her music hit, there wasn't a huge eruption right away. But then when they kind of, when the music went away and the Ronda Rousey chant started, and I'd have to say it was probably 90% of the crowd that was behind her and chanting for the most part. So she's got a little bit of a feel to her because it hasn't really been anything that she said on the mic. I don't think she's been very good. She kind of, her first lines today, she kind of had the mic a little too far from her mouth and the crowd couldn't really hear
yep.
anything she was saying. So, I mean, I think she's just getting over based on, obviously, her celebrity, because she hasn't really done anything on the mic yet that won her over, I don't think.
How did the crowd react to Stephanie? And let me be specific in my question. Did they react to her like, wink, nod, we know you're the brand ambassador and the woman who promoted women's wrestling to unheard of heights, and we know you just like playing a bad guy on TV, but shucks, we're going to play along and boo you? Or was it like, we're into this and you're saying things that are crossing a line even with us, and like genuine kind of intense heel heat? Or was there were you able to kind of differentiate or get a sense of that?
Yeah, I don't think there was. I think it was more the former. I think she kind of, you know, it's Stephanie. Everybody knows the gimmick by now. she plays it well, though. I thought she was tremendous tonight, and Triple H as well.
Jason, what have you got for Mitch?
Yeah, Mitch, just while we're talking about that first segment, I thought it was great when Stephanie said to Kurt, you know, you won a gold medal with a broken neck, but it was a large section of the crowd, and this came through where they said broken freaking neck. And I love the way that you guys put in freaking neck. That made me laugh. That was great.
That's funny.
Yeah, I caught that too. That was good.
Yeah. I guess when Goldust came out to interrupt John Cena, it seemed to me that the crowd were really hanging on everything that he was saying, like they were really intently listening to Goldust. Did you feel like his interruption sort of caught the crowd by surprise and people really listening to what he had to say? Because obviously he's earned a lot of respect over the years.
Yeah, I think it caught people by surprise because it's not 2003 anymore. You know, you don't expect Goldberg to come out, Goldust to come out and interrupt like that. I think they were on his side listening to what he was saying at first. I thought it got a little rambly. I think people were having a hard time following where he was going with his long gold dust pauses and whatnot. But I was interested in it. It seems like nothing more than just like a little one-off thing to get gold dust on TV. But I think it worked for what it was.
Real quick on gold dust. I talked about this weekend on a VIP Wade Keller hotline about the idea of using veteran wrestlers who are good hands, the Carpenters, in a role that's, you know, a level above jobbing, where you're out there to kind of make somebody else look good and give the match a sense of competitiveness, and maybe this is the once every year or two that there's a big upset vibe to a match. This is a good example of what I was talking about, taking somebody like Goldust who, you know, they've revved up and cooled off a few times, but he can go out there and as you called it, Mitch, a one-off. You know, give Cena a way to go win pretty convincingly and show his moveset and not have to have interference, not have to have 50-50 booking, but also not have a complete and total squash with a no-name jobber. I like this. I mean, would I like to see Goldust getting something more than this? Well, sure. But when he got his push, the crowd reactions just weren't there. You know, all these house show reports we got with R-Truth, it was like the crowd just wasn't into it. And I think Vince just felt like, okay, I mean, you know, we got to listen to the fans, except when it comes to Roman Reigns, and we've got to move on. And I think they did. But this is not a bad use, and I'd like to see them find other veteran talent who are respected hands in the ring, do one-off matches to break up the overexposure of wrestlers who are feuding with each other at a pay-per-view, wrestling each other in a variety of other matches, like Miztourage versus Seth and Balor, and you know how they mix and match the same people against each other all the time. And SmackDown has this all the time. I like interjecting a one-off situation. So more of what we saw tonight with different people like Goldust as often as you can. That gets my vote. Go ahead, Jason.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I was just going to say, Mitch, who was more over as a babyface, Seth Rollins or Finn Balor?
It's hard to tell because they came out like just back-to-back and they both got really big. They both got really big pops, but the crowd was kind of still going for Rollins when Finn came out. So it was close. I'd probably say they're the two biggest entrance pops of the night. Braun didn't really get one because he was just lifting a car up when they cut to him for the first time. So he didn't get his entrance music. But I'd say maybe Seth, just a little bit of a slight edge. You know, he's from Iowa. I think he wrestled a lot around the Midwest here when he was coming up. So I think he got a little bit of the edge, but Finn was very popular too.
And with the Revival and the bar match, because on TV, they just sort of cut to the Revival and they didn't get an entrance. Did they do any mic work beforehand? How were they introduced?
Yeah, no mic work. They just got their normal entrance, came out to the ring to not much fanfare. It was a weird match because they're kind of two heel teams. So I don't really think that anybody knew. I think Cesaro and Sheamus were obviously favorites in the match, but when you got two heel teams like that, it's hard to get into the match, I feel.
Yeah, I sensed that too. I was going to ask if it felt like that was sort of a chance for the crowd to figuratively recharge, you know, maybe pay attention to the match, but not be super into it emotionally. How about Asuka and Nia Jax? How did the crowd react to Asuka as a star compared to, say, Seth and Finn and Angle and Cena? I mean, where is she in the top tier mix or a notch or two below? And Nia Jax, part two of the question, did the fans really end up sympathetic towards her? Did they pick up on the body language and the way that she tapped and the way that she sat with that sense of being defeated in the ring? Or did it take the Alexa Bliss dressing down to really get the crowd to maybe see that that was essentially an official babyface turn?
Yeah, Asuka, I wouldn't quite say she's on the level of Seth and Finn and those people, but in terms of a female wrestler, I'd say she definitely got the biggest ovation of the night. I've seen Charlotte before, and she's not quite on that Charlotte level yet, I wouldn't say. But when her music hits, people definitely stand up. They're interested in her entrance and in her. Naya, I don't think the tap did much for her in terms of the sympathy. I thought that sequence lasted a little too long. I think she maybe picked out of the arm bar one too many times. I feel like Todd might be bothered by that a little bit. And even the Bliss thing backstage, I feel like Alexa was kind of funny about it. I think there were a lot of laughs in the crowd as she would say her lines about, I never saw you give up like that or whatnot. So I really don't think it did much in terms of sympathy, at least not with the live crowd.
Interesting.
Hard to get sympathy on someone that's so much bigger than the other girls.
How about the Paul Heyman, Brock Lesnar, the promo about Brock Lesnar, what Reigns had to say about him last week, and then the reaction that Roman Reigns got when he eventually came out? I'm real curious how the crowd responded to Roman when he walked out, and then as that segment kind of progressed with the interaction with Heyman.
Yeah, Paul, when he came out, it was definitely not your typical response to Paul Heyman. It was 50-50 pretty much. A lot of people were just booing him for it wasn't loud booing, but it certainly wasn't the crowd going along with my name is Paul Heyman and whatnot. It was whatever they're doing, it seems a lot of people are buying it, at least in Milwaukee, because Roman came out, it was probably 60-40 in favor of Roman. And I'm not a Roman guy, it sure seemed like what the angle was that. And I heard people around me talking about the Chicago main event or him against Kane that only went 30 seconds.
Mm-hmm.
And so obviously that's getting around. So I think what they're doing is working. And it sure seems like Paul played to it, even though I thought Paul made a really good point that I didn't expect them to talk about, and that, like, when Undertaker comes out one time a year, he's still Undertaker. I thought people kind of said, oh, yeah, he's got a point there, but it still seemed like the majority of the crowd was anti-Brock, and I wouldn't call him necessarily pro-Roman, but I sure could see Roman getting some positive, much more positive reactions than he has been getting in the weeks leading up to WrestleMania.
How was the crowd response to Cena percentage wise?
I didn't see anywhere that he was going to be here for sure tonight. So I heard a lot of people wondering if he was going to be there, because they showed something on the Tron a little before the match started that said something about Cena's road to WrestleMania tonight. I assumed he was just on SmackDown now, but a lot of, he got that instant pop when his music hit because the people realized he was there. And then it went down to the usual 50-50. Milwaukee's not a big boo. They're not really ever going to boo a guy out of the building. They're not a Chicago or Philly crowd. They're a little more kind to the babyface than some of the other towns.
Did they advertise a match to sell tickets that happened after Raw went off the air, or was that the end of the show?
The advertised match was it was Reigns, Cena, Strowman, and Seth against Miz, Kane, and The Bar. So that didn't happen. Kane came out right when the show ended and had about a little less than a 5-minute match with Roman, obviously winning.
And how about before the show?
They had Apollo 1 against Kurt Hawkins. The crowd was surprisingly into Apollo. There were a few Apollo chants. There was only about 50% of the people that would be there at that time, but I thought Apollo had a surprise or a pretty good reaction. He's had a few good showings lately, so maybe that helped him. And then the other one was Delisto and Grand Metalik beat Daivari and Tony Nese.
Jason, do you have anything else you want to ask Mitch?
Yeah, when Sasha went for the hug and sort of Bayley pushed her away, what was your action with the crowd there?
Just kind of like your ooh. It seems like I don't know which way they're taking it. I think people were kind of like they said. People thought they were already not together, and then now they're kind of back again. And I think people are just kind of want to see what the next step is. They kind of just a stalemate these last few weeks, and I think people are just looking forward to seeing the payoff of it.
Yeah, well, see, I don't know about you guys, but I see Bayley here as being the heel because when you look at it, she addressed this in her promo. She talked about, look, she can understand that the Royal Rumble was every woman for herself. So was the Elimination Chamber. So Sasha Banks really didn't do anything wrong, yet it was Bayley who turned her back on Sasha in a tag match where you are meant to be on the same team. Now, when you look at Roman Reigns, when Roman Reigns eliminated Rollins from the Royal Rumble, it was like, well, they're Shield guys and they're still brothers and every man for himself. There's nothing wrong with that. And then when they had to go against each other at the Elimination Chamber, once again, it was okay. So it actually, to me, seems like that Bayley is the one who is not acting correctly because she's getting upset for Sasha for doing something she really had no reason to feel bad about. Yet in a tag match, they're meant to be tag team partners. It was Bayley turned on Sasha. So the way the story is playing out, it seems to me Sasha has more of a reason to be upset at Bayley. Yet the commentators want to make it seem like it was Sasha who stabbed Bayley in the back. So it's a bit of a disconnect here for me if the plan is to turn Sasha heel.
Yeah, I think that is a flaw in what they've done so far that Bayley has to talk her way out of. And Sasha has to, at some point, come across, make a flimsy case that fans see through where it seems like she's trying to justify attacking a friend. And Bayley needs to make the case that, you know, there's a time and a place in an every woman for herself match to do that. But the times you chose Sasha were when my back was turned. And we should have taken care of business and made sure at least one of us was the winner. That's what friends would do. And we can fight it out facing each other. I think there's a promo Bayley can cut. She just didn't cut it tonight. And I'm not sure that she is. You know, I'm not sure where it's going. Mitch, is there anything else you want to share from your on-site experience tonight in Raw? Any other crowd reactions or any other things that we would not have seen on TV necessarily?
It was a small thing, but at the start of the Sheamus, Cesaro, and Revival, Sheamus ripped his shirt off and he threw it towards the audience, and it came up just short. A woman went reaching for it, and she was trying to hang on the barricade to get it, and Cesaro ran over there like he was going to get it and give it to her, and he kind of just heel moved her and grabbed it and took it back to the corner and didn't give it to her. I thought that was pretty cool.
Well, funny.
And then the other thing that stuck out was I thought Vince couldn't have written it better himself when Miz was talking about Finn, and it doesn't make you over just because you use a hand signal. That's not even really yours. That just sounded like a line that would have popped Vince pretty good, I think.
Yeah,
sometimes you got to wonder. Yeah, I was just going to say, sometimes you got to wonder about Miz's promos. As a heel, he hits really close to home as a heel, and sometimes you got to wonder if Vince is not there with him and saying, you know what, just sneak this in. Sneak this one in. Yeah, sneak that in.
Yes, I think you're so right. I think Miz is a vessel for Vince to shoot a little bit and say some things that nobody else really could get away with saying. And I'm not even sure it's best for business, although I do think Miz is the best at delivering those lines. Mitch, thanks so much. I appreciate we're able to talk to you. Hopefully next time they're in town, you can reach out.
Yeah, definitely, Wade. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. All right, we'll be back right after this. We got a bunch of emails to get to. I appreciate you subscribing to the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show, and hopefully you're also checking out the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Podcast at Podcast One, our Thursday and Friday episodes. Also, if you haven't yet, be sure to check out the PW Torch livecast lineup. Just search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts. Monday nights, it's MMA Talk for Pro Wrestling Fans. Tuesday, it's Making the List with Pat McNeil. Wednesday, it's our NXT dedicated program called PWT Talks NXT. And then Thursday, it's an Impact-themed show following Impact Wrestling every Thursday night with Mike and Andrew. Friday, it's the best of PW Torch Livecast. We had a post-WrestleMania show from 2010, I think, if I remember right. We put up last Friday, the call-in shows. You can check back and relive that event and also hear what people were saying about the show, that the night of the event. And then Saturdays, it's Deep Dive with Rich Fan. And Sundays, including this Sunday after Fastlane, it's Wrestling Night in America. Be sure to check out the show every Sunday with Greg Parks talking about wrestling's biggest events with live callers. And then when there is an actual big event on Sunday nights, the show moves to a post show. And that'll be the case, like I said, following Fastlane on Sunday. So be sure to check that out. Just go to pwtorchlivecast.com to get a list of upcoming shows and access to past shows. Or to subscribe like a regular podcast, just search PW Torch in Apple Podcasts or any app where you listen to podcasts on your iPhone or Android device. Again, that's search PW Torch to go along with your Wade Keller post shows and Wade Keller podcasts throughout the week here. It's a great compliment to the shows that I do 4 days a week. You get different perspectives from the Torch team, including themed weekly shows covering topics that maybe get don't get as much attention as you'd like here on our four shows per week. All right, we are back for the email segment. If you want to send emails during Raw or during SmackDown or for the Thursday flagship, which we record on Wednesdays because it drops just right past midnight on Thursdays, send questions and comments to Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. That's Wade Keller Podcast at pwtorch.com. If you attend a live event, by the way, and we had a lot of reports this weekend. I thank everybody for coming through. A lot of you were pwtorch.com readers, but a lot of you also were Wade Keller Podcast listeners. We had a lot of correspondence reports from the Chicago show referenced earlier by Mitch, where Lesnar, you know, didn't even put in a full minute in front of the crowd against Kane in the quick match in Chicago, and the NXT shows where Bobby Fish appeared to suffer a knee injury. Just really good detailed reports, multiple reports from certain shows. So check that out if you haven't yet. It's really interesting to find out what's going on and who's putting forth an effort and how the crowd is reacting to house shows when the cameras are not rolling. And if you haven't checked it out, check it out at pwtorch.com. And if you attend a live event, we appreciate you sending in results, as many of our correspondents did this weekend. That email address is pwtorch at pwtorch.com. That is a catch-all for any news tips, results, upcoming lineups, anything noteworthy that you think might be worth passing along to our readers and listeners, pwtorch at pwtorch.com. All right, let's go to our first question, Josh, who says, I'm sitting here watching Raw and seeing the highly technical selfie promo by Braun, and it has me wondering why they are, in my opinion, ruining him. With his size and ability, he could be an awesome heel who just destroys everything in his path. Instead, they put a stupid catchphrase on him and do selfie promos with words flashing up. He begs the crowd to let him do power slam after power slam. It's just sad. I think it was you that said at this point it's hard to put the championship on him because when he gets beat, it makes him look weak. I think as a heel, he could pull off a run where he wins a title, beats everyone, and when someone does finally cost him the belt, it could be a big feat, like Brock Lesnar. It wouldn't discredit his character, and he doesn't have to look like a big walking doofus that they can't figure a good story out for. Your thoughts. P.S. Asked last week about the announce table not being a DQ. Why is it the unforgiving steel steps can be used as a battering ram, and it's fine, but if you pop someone with a title belt that looks like it weighs about 3 pounds, it'll knock out a guy cold. And it gets you, it not only knocks a guy out cold, but it gets you disqualified. It's weird. Thanks, Wade. Keep killing it. Thanks, Josh. So two questions there. Topic A, the Braun Strowman portrayal. Jason, we talked about the words on the screen. I haven't talked to you about the selfie promos or just Braun's general push right now. I did state earlier, I think that given what they're doing with Braun, you can't second guess it, but given what they're doing, you know, there's going to be, they're a little more, what's the word I'm looking for? Light and frivolous, not to the point of New Day, yeah. with what they're doing with him. How do you feel about the points Josh made?
For me, with Braun Strowman, I feel like he has to win the championship sooner or later because he's been so dominant. To me, it's unrealistic that he wouldn't win the title, and you just get the sense they're just keeping him warm. just in case something happens with Roman Reigns. It's funny because I don't know if I see a natural opponent for him at WrestleMania. David on Twitter asked, you know, he thought, would you go down the path of Braun Strowman versus Samoa Joe? Now, for me, on paper, that seems like a great matchup at WrestleMania. You know, hard-hitting Joe versus Braun. Obviously, Braun is the babyface now, Joe as the heel. I would prefer it if the roles were switched. Then the question is, though, who do you put over? Because I don't want Joe returning and then losing, and I don't want Braun Strowman losing. So it's a great matchup. I just don't know how they would book it. But as far as his portrayal having a bit of a light side to him, I personally don't mind it. You know, I don't mind it, and I think a lot of the fans also don't mind it. I think they're seeing him another side to him, and it's would I prefer him as a heel dominating and as a champion? Yes, because then I think you could build up a Seth Rollins to eventually beat him fair and square, and that makes Seth the biggest star. But this is the path they've gone down, and I'm just waiting to see how it plays out and where we get to. So I'm not really down on it, but I would prefer him as a killer heel.
And I think it's a path that the fans took WWE down. You know, the fans turned Braun, and WWE listened.
Roman turned Braun, let's be honest. He was getting cheers from Roman.
Yeah, no, you're right. And I mean, it's a good line, and there's truth to it, what you just said. I do think even minus Roman, that Braun would have still been cheered. Like, I think it was Roman helped. You are right. But I think fans just had an affection for Braun. And I don't think WWE really could have pushed against it for much longer without it making all the baby faces that Braun was facing. It would put all of them in a bad position. So WWE's in the business of presenting the product the way that they present it. Vince McMahon labels it sports entertainment and tries to define it as something different than pro wrestling. It just is what it is. Pro wrestling comes in many different forms and always has. Different territories had different tones to the way that they presented the product. Some are more realistic. Some had more comedy. And this is what they do. And Braun is a more versatile character for them to produce if they loosen up on him being a straight-up monster heel. And they got all this TV time to fill, and it's lucrative TV time. And so, I mean, I get it. It doesn't mean that there's only one way to push Braun, one good way to push Braun. But I think that this is reasonable, but I understand where Josh is coming from too, thinking, man, I see a lot of money in him being this unstoppable killer heel. But I just think you have to add the fan response to the equation. And when you evaluate it, go ahead, Jason. Yeah.
Yeah, and I was just going to say, I mean, I always thought in my mind, you know, you build up Braun Strowman as a killer heel. He wins a championship. Shinsuke Nakamura, you build him up as a silent, kick-ass Japanese guy, and then you could have built to a big match between those two. I always thought that would have been such a great matchup, Nakamura to take down the big monster and Braun, you know.
See, I don't like when alternate booking plans are presented that make me wish they had done it because that is It almost feels too late for that now, but that would have been a really nice chapter in both of their WWE stints, what you just described. The DQ, the inconsistency about a table versus stairs versus a belt and how it hurts people, it kind of plays into my comment about Asuka in the armbar. It just, you know, as long as they're consistent with the nonsense, I'm more okay with the nonsense. You know, the it doesn't make any sense, but if they're consistent with it, I give them at least some wiggle room. Let's get a comment here. VIP member Ted from Sacramento, counter view to what we said about Stephanie and Ron earlier. He goes, my view of traditional wrestling booking was that the goal was to get the crowd to want to see the heel get what is coming to them. I think this is where WWE has made a big mistake. I don't think there's any chance Stephanie will get beat up at WrestleMania. In the past 10 years, no one's been able to show up Stephanie except Vicky Guerrero and only on her way out the door. Do you see this as a huge flaw in WWE booking? The fact that there is no hope the babyfaces will be able to give the heels what is coming to them. Thanks for all the great VIP content. VIP is an amazing bargain with such insightful commentary each week. Thank you, Ted. I appreciate it. PWTorch.com/goVIP if you feel that you're missing out on everything else that we do during the week. And you are, if you're not a VIP member, you can go VIP at pwtorch.com/goVIP. It'll tell you all about everything that comes with the membership. Jason, Stephanie, do you anticipate Stephanie getting beat up?
I don't know. I don't even want to think about it. I don't want to think about Stephanie winning, but you know, Ted raises a good point. This is the same company that had Brock Lesnar come back and lose first pay-per-view match against John Cena, just to let him know who's boss. Could I see Stephanie sneaking away with some type of victory? Yes. I more can see Triple H sneaking a victory over Kurt Angle and Triple H and Stephanie winning.
No, that's preposterous. Triple H would never put himself over at a wrestling. You know what? This is my, not devious, but my the potential scenarios. They're going to have a plan where Stephanie taps out and Angle taps out. That Hunter and Stephanie are both tapping out at the same time to Ronda and Angle. And that'll be the match that's planned. Everyone will talk about how much sense it makes. They'll rehearse it. They'll talk about it. And then a day or two before WrestleMania, Hunter's going to knock on someone's door, text someone, maybe Vince, be like, hey, this is a crazy idea somebody just gave to me, but hear me out. What if Stephanie, in a fluke way, and here's a scenario, survives against Ronda because this happens, and then I blindside Kurt Angle with a pedigree and pin him, and then that leads to X, Y, and Z that Hunter tries to justify as being better for business. Like, but I'm sort of ashamed to offer this because it looks like I'm doing it for myself. But I really, like, I think there's a chance that happens because that's sort of Hunter's reputation. Fair or unfair, exaggerated or not, there's truth to that. There are elements of truth to that reputation for sure. We've had ex-creative team members on giving examples of it. I am fearful of that. That all said, and given Hunter a little hard time about it, I think the match ends with either Hunter and Steph tapping out, or more likely Stephanie tapping out and it being a big feel-good WrestleMania moment. I really do think Ronda Rousey is a big enough star that the usual Stephanie McMahon rules do not apply. The fear is founded, but I don't think that it will come to fruition. The worst fears will not come true come WrestleMania. That's my prediction.
But you can understand people who do think that. Without a shadow of a doubt, you can understand them.
For sure. All right, Brian from Richmond, Virginia. Hey, Wade, big fan of the show. Go VIP, everyone. Thank you, Brian. Paul Heyman's rebuttal tonight was actually believable because he brought up some valid points in response to Roman's best promo last week. Leave it to Heyman to bring out the best in people by challenging them. He's great on the mic, as we know. One, he put over the belt, which we know the name of the Universal belt is hokey, but as an old-school AWA fan, I love when they put over the belt. He even said some words that are forbidden regarding what is obvious to a casual viewer, that it is a trophy in the form of a big, giant red and gold belt. Two, he cited the fact that fans complained that Brock didn't appear, but we pine for a yearly Undertaker appearance. In my opinion, a great twist on blending truth to fit things into a heel's perspective. Well put. Three, subtle references to Dana White, both by Heyman and Stephanie Ronda. What's your take on that? Thank you. I will say the Undertaker point, and then I'll sneak this in first, Jason. The Undertaker point works on a certain level, but fans go, yeah, well, Undertaker's not the Universal Champion. He's not showing up at house shows and working 35-second matches. And when he does show up at WrestleMania, he has a track record year after year after year after year of putting in the best performance he's physically capable of. And there has been a steep drop-off recently in what that physical effort is. But he's earned that goodwill through decades with the company, never leaving, and being 50 freaking years old, not 40-ish. You know, like, so there are some major differences. And then you throw in Taker's a lifer and Lesnar is pay me or I'm going to the other sport. I mean, there's all kinds of differences that make put fans in a position where they don't see him as comparable. But Bryant is right. It is blending truth to fit things into a heel's perspective. And Heyman did a great job with that, where fans are like, ooh, yeah, wait a second. What did you just try to pull off? So,
yeah, exactly. You're right, Wade. On the surface, it seems like, yeah, I'll take it right. Wait a minute. What about the 20 years prior that he put into it as a full-time person? Nah, wait a minute. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And I would love for Reigns to have caught him out on that. That would have been great. Roman Reigns, wait a minute. I'm not falling for what you've got to say. The Undertaker, He's been with the company for over 20 odd years, and before that, he was full time for 20 odd. You know, what are you trying to say? You know,
yeah. Although I actually think they want Lesnar to be heel, but they don't want Reigns to, like, he could have gone away with that, but I think they sort of feel like it either speaks for itself or let the announcer say it, because I think Reigns rested his case so well last week. It almost might have been too much to almost kind of microanalyze and break up what Heyman said. I think most fans know how they feel about Undertaker and Lesnar, even if they can't express the differences that they have towards their work ethic.
Yeah. And in relation to what the emailer talked about with mentioning UFC, you know, I noticed Ronda said that, you know, she's worked for bosses before that, you know, have sort of done this type of thing. I mean, was that – what are they trying to pull here?
I just think they're trying to do what Miz does, wink and nod to the audience and say, you're smart. We know you're smart. We're not going to play dumb. We're going to throw some stuff in here. And it's I think they think that viewers feel more respected when real life is interjected into some of the content. And they think they find strategic opportunities to do it. And I think they do it pretty well in that regard.
Okay, and maybe they thought Ronda's character had to address that because she wasn't entitled. So if she addressed that, she's been through these type of tricks before, that's why she's not so angry towards Steph and Triple H. She's letting it to slide by because she's been in control of this situation before. So maybe they felt that was something they had to address.
Yeah. All right, let's go to another question on Roman since we're talking about him. Jeff from Colorado. Good evening, Wade. Credit where it is due. I don't believe I heard a single Oscar joke for the first 2.5 hours. I feel like it years past, it would have been filled with an endless number of references to the Oscars throughout the whole show. He says, for non-VIP members, I have a quick message. Go VIP! Exclamation mark. Then once you've signed up, go listen to The Fix with Todd Martin and the Bruce Mitchell Mailbag. Well, thank you, Jeff. These are unsolicited plugs. I know some people, you know, who are not VIP members are like, I get it. VIP is great, but I can't help but read them when people say it because I appreciate the feedback and we put a lot into it. So he also says, they said on commentary, Roman was, quote, asked by management to stay away, afraid of what he would say. I wish he would have come out in street clothes, maybe even no music. I think that would have helped. A small detail, sure. To me, it's an important detail, though. What do you think? Should he have been in street clothes or would it not make a difference to you?
Bingo. Love it. Exactly. Yeah. That's such a great point. He should have come out. Yes, that 100%. That's a little detail they should pay attention to because nobody believes Roman Reigns is going out there and saying stuff that management don't want him to say. Roman Reigns is management. He's Vince McMahon's chosen one. He comes out there in street clothes, even through the crowd or whatever. Beautiful. Love it. That's definitely a little attention they should have paid attention to.
And that would have been a nice thing.
Detail.
Yeah, and it would have been a nice thing to add to the list of subtle things WWE did that rewarded people who paid close attention. And I think the commentary has been better. I think the attention to detail has been better. I think some of it through inclusion, some of it through exclusion, and the references to history has been better. I mean, I think there's still some things, rightfully so, to disagree with, especially on the SmackDown side lately. But there's some things WWE is doing better. They're doing more things better in the subtle category, the straighten your tie moments, as I call them, than they've done in a while. And I appreciate it. I think it makes for a more cohesive, cleaner show.
Could I just – I just wanted to touch on the John Cena promo because I really wanted to talk about something here. First of all, what he's talking about – he's almost feeling bad that he's going to break Ric Flair's record, which I don't think he should. He has every right to. So it's almost like he's apologizing to the fans. And now he's throwing out a match saying Cena, Nakamura, and Styles. Last week he threw out the possibility of Cena and Undertaker. So in two consecutive weeks, he's throwing out some two big matches. We're more than likely only going to get one of them. Or do we get a fatal four-way? What's he trying to achieve throwing out two big matches like this to get the fans excited?
Well, I think – well, I'll throw Jorge's question in here. He goes, can AJ Styles come out on Raw and shut up John Cena? This is getting nuts. And he also says, why does Goldust sound like Vince McMahon? I admire the John Cena trying to throw people off the path that Undertaker Cena is inevitable. And – you know, people look at Fastlane and they go, well, John Cena's not going to win because he's going to face Undertaker. And what would they do with AJ Styles? We're looking forward to AJ and Shinsuke. I think there's somebody in that company right now, more people in that company, speaking up on behalf of what's the conventional wisdom among our informed fans in this social media podcast era. And how do we give them a story to believe in? And that's I've argued that for that in recent years, that it's not about is it something people would believe under oath is the truth. It's just give them a story that they can believe in. It's a twist on suspend their disbelief. Just give them a story to believe in when they're watching the show, and it makes things go smooth. So John has given people a storyline to believe in for the fans who are not quite at the level of saying, well, that for sure won't happen because I know exactly what's going to happen. And instead, the fan's like, I'm pretty sure it's going to be AJ Shinsuke, and Cena's going to do something else because they want AJ and Shinsuke to wrestle. So what did Cena do? He took that into account and said, well, yeah, you're going to get AJ Shinsuke because I'm going to win, and I'm going to defend against Shinsuke, but AJ is going to cash in his rematch clause and make it a three-way, and we're going to all be at WrestleMania. So I like that. I like Cena telling fans, you don't need to overthink it because I'm going to give you the scenario that allows you to go into Fastlane, not knowing for sure if what people are saying about me and Undertaker being inevitable and that it's going to be AJ retaining. I'm going to throw a little doubt out there so that you can enjoy watching the match a little bit more.
Yeah, I can agree with that, and I'm definitely for that. I'm just thinking he's thrown two matches out there, and I guess, you know, and I'm just thinking, you know, on my feet here. I mean, they do that at the Royal Rumble. Everyone talks about going on to main event WrestleMania, but there's only one that does it. I guess throwing those two matches out there, you want to go to the match that I think fans are more inclined want to see, and that would be Undertaker versus John Cena. So I just find it interesting. I'm not saying it's a bad thing, so I think you made a really good case for it. I just find it interesting they are presenting those scenarios where the fans are thinking, yeah, it actually could be that. But, you know, Shinsuke versus Cena versus AJ Styles, we'd like to see the one-on-one. Geez, that would be a hell of a match, wouldn't it?
Yes. All right. Anthony says, hey, Wade, love all your content. It gets me through my long days as a FedEx driver. I was wondering if you think after tonight's backstage segment with Alexa Bliss and Nia Jax that it is more likely it becomes a triple threat, or does Asuka challenge Charlotte and we see Jax versus Bliss? It kind of seemed like a strong attempt to make Jax seem like a babyface with the crying factor and bringing up the fact that she was bullied. Thanks again. Everyone should go VIP. And he included 4 or 5 exclamation marks. The font's not big enough for me to tell. I think it's 5. As if it matters. Thank you, Anthony. Appreciate it. The Jax Bliss scenario and then Asuka challenging Charlotte. The announcers did say tonight again that Asuka may face Bliss. They are not acting now that it is they're not acting like it's a foregone conclusion. So they're still playing that up, but they're not playing it up too much because I think they want to play it up as a decision when they want it to be at the forefront. And they're keeping it in the undercurrent right now until that becomes a top storyline to feature on Raw. And I get that, and that's fine. I do still expect Asuka, Charlotte, and Jax Bliss, not a triple threat. In fact, I certainly hope it's not a triple threat because Asuka should be in a one-on-one match at Mania. So should all of those women in that list. I want to see one-on-one matches.
Yeah. Well, you know, the way that I see it playing out, I think, you know, Charlotte will be victorious over Ruby Riott this weekend. And then, you know, wouldn't it surprise me if Asuka then rocks up at the pay-per-view and announces that she's going to challenge Charlotte. And then on Raw, remember they've teased before numerous times, Alexa's always talked about having that dream WrestleMania matchup with Nia Jax. I can see Nia Jax throwing that right back in her face. So that's the way that I see it playing out. And I think that's why they've put Mickie James with Alexa Bliss. We'll probably see Mickie James against Nia Jax in the coming weeks, you know, to give her someone to feud with. And then Alexa will get her cheap shots in. But I definitely think that's the way they're going.
All right, Alex Cato says, hey, Wade, so the last couple Manias, they have a ladder match. Which match do you think will be the WrestleMania ladder match? I'd much rather see Seth, Balor, Miz stay triple threat, but I could see during the week of WrestleMania they could add that stipulation. What do you think? Again, an unsolicited plug here. I'm going to read it. I became a VIP member a couple months ago, and it was the best decision I've ever made. Wow. I grew up watching the Attitude Era, and I've been reading and listening to everything from 1998 to 2001. Thank you for all the content, and I love the interviews with ex-creative team members. Keep up the great work, and to everyone, if you haven't gone VIP, you'll get these hands if you haven't signed up yet. Thanks, Alex. Yeah. Jason, the ladder match, I could see it being added to Seth, Balor, and Miz, especially given that we've seen Seth, Balor, and Miz against each other in different formats. It does seem like that would make sense. Hadn't thought of that yet. I'm not serious. I'm not even endorsing it. I'm fine with no ladder match, but I'm just saying, I could see it.
But the email is right. We have been seeing ladder matches. I mean, what was it, the tag last year?
Yeah.
I just got to say, with the Miz, Balor, and Seth Rollins, I would have much preferred to see Miz versus Balor one-on-one. And it's just me personally, and Rollins team up with Ronda Rousey. I like Rollins with Rousey. I just think after the momentum that Seth Rollins gained from defeating John Cena and Roman Reigns and having just having a strong performance and the crowd getting behind him, and it really seemed like he was the number one babyface last week, Rollins, against The Miz. I don't know. I feel like having Rollins play off Balor, it's just – I feel like it might be doing damage to both of them. I feel like Miz versus Balor is good. Rollins, I would have preferred something else. I just feel like they're not really capitalizing on the momentum that Rollins had, and I don't like him bickering with Balor, these two babyfaces. Well, what's your opinion on that, Wade?
Both guys should have more momentum going into WrestleMania. I have to give WWE some latitude here, given that they had Samoa Joe, Jason Jordan, and Dean Ambrose go down. And the idea is, well, how do we get them in a big match? And so you get the bickering baby face at a time when you would like to see both guys have just a clear path to be mega over. I think they can stay mega over as long as they are prideful but not jerks to each other. You know, like, there can be moments of one-upping each other, like Balor just kind of grinning, sitting on the top turnbuckle after Seth stole the moment and did the stomp. It's not like they're bitter enemies. It's just they're both, you know, and Miz, I mean, Miz in the Mizzy segment, you know, the editing, the selective editing, but not deceptive editing, did make it seem like, you know, Seth, I mean, there were some good points if you're scoring points. Miz scored some points on him. And I think that having Seth and Balor in singles matches, each opposite of a heel, and being able to just get that 100% crowd reaction would have been ideal. Ideal got knocked out of the way with three key injuries to people who could have been in the mix with any of these three. So I'm more forgiving of it, and I think that they'll be fine, again, as long as they don't make one or the other look dumb. Now, the other, or just look unreasonable, the other option is they actually turn Finn Balor heel and then do a superstar shakeup, and Finn goes to take on Styles on SmackDown, which, you know, I'm not against either.
Yes. I've read some rumors that they might turn Seth again heel because Roman needs a heel opponent. That surely they cannot go down that path. I mean, that would be stupid to do that. Seth Rollins, all this momentum behind him, I feel like he's getting back on track. Surely they're not going to turn him heel. If you're going to turn one of them, it has to be Finn Balor.
Yeah, and I mean, they should move Seth to SmackDown to be a lead babyface and just do their job and get some other heels in there. I mean, bring up Drew McIntyre as a heel to take on Roman. Figure anything out. Do not turn Seth into Big Show, Kurt Angle, Lex Luger, a guy who turned, and AJ Styles for that matter, back in TNA, where they turned so much, you stop believing either side that you see is authentic because they're the utility guy who gets turned to fit the slot that's empty. And that's not a money spot. That's not a great spot to be in. And it's hurt. It hurt Lex Luger back in the 90s, and it hurt AJ Styles and TNA. It's destroyed Big Show's credibility as a character, and it really did put a cap on Kurt Angle's potential as either being always a heel or always a face. Same thing in TNA with Angle. He's so good at both, but that doesn't mean you do both back and forth all the time.
Mm.
I mentioned another Twitter poll at PW Torch. How would you advise WWE regarding Brock Lesnar's contract expiring soon? Let him go, good riddance, sign him, pay him big money, renew him only on a budget, or I don't care either way. And 976 votes in, final results of that poll, and we have 48% saying let him go, good riddance. 18% say renew, but only on a budget. 21%, I think this might be as bad as let him go, good riddance, is I don't care either way. That's not good. Only 13% say pay big money to sign him. That puts positions Roman Reigns pretty good at WrestleMania. If PW Torch followers, you know, this isn't casual fans. These are people who are discerning, ardent fans, however you want to describe them. Very, very much ready to see Lesnar go. Where are you on that, Jason? How do you vote?
All right. So he signed with the company after WrestleMania 28, right? 2012. So he's been with them for 6 years. How much money would that cost him over the 6 years, Wade, roughly? What, about 30, 40 mil?
I'm trying to compute. Yeah, that sounds about right.
Well, say
go ahead.
All right, so say it's 40 mil. Okay?
Tens of millions of dollars.
Dollars. All right, so over this time, would you say that he has been worth that investment? Just a yes or no answer.
Ooh. Yes.
And let me, okay. Yes. Okay. So in that time, name me a current wrestler on an active wrestler on the roster who has come out looking better after being in the ring or having a program with Brock Lesnar. Who can say that Brock Lesnar's made this person better in as far as the perception of the fans are concerned?
Well, list his opponents. Let's kind of rate it as we go. Talk about some of his bigger opponents.
Okay, well, I'm thinking off the top of my head. Yeah. The only people that he's put over, and this is off the top of my head, Cena, Triple H, and Goldberg. I can't think of anyone else who has gotten a win over. Maybe Seth Rollins in that battleground match, but that was due to some interference. So I'm just thinking that if you have someone for that amount of money, for that amount of time, surely there are two to three active wrestlers that would have benefited from feuding with Brock Lesnar. I just can't seem to name them. Now, I'm not saying whether this is good or bad. I'm just simply stating the facts.
Yeah, and I think you have to look at – I don't want to call it an intangible. That sounds a little bit like a cop-out, but an immeasurable maybe is a better word, but it's there. How much did he raise the water level of the WWE brand and help WWE during a time of growth in certain key areas, including – getting the network off the ground? We don't know where they would be if they didn't have Brock Lesnar matches as a featured attraction during the network era.
And further to that point, Wade, sorry, and this is a big one. He defeated The Undertaker the first month the network was introduced. Mm-hmm. And I've always believed that one of the main reasons Vince put Lesnar over The Undertaker was to get people to buy the network because they had to watch that moment and capture it there and then. And Lesnar was the only believable person. So that, in my mind, is worth its weight in gold. I'm just thinking, definitely with the pay-per-view matches, but he's only really put over Cena, Triple H, and Goldberg.
Yeah. I don't get – and different people have different weight that they put on this, but – and I'm not saying it's not important, but I don't know that Lesnar's value is in making other people stars or putting other people over. I think the idea is raise the water level, bring star power, and when you share the space like Roman Reigns or Seth Rollins or not that John Cena needed at that point or Undertaker, but when you share the stage, just the show with Brock Lesnar and his star power, we take it for granted now, and this poll reflects it, that I think some of the shine is off. Because he's a guy who's been around a long time. There aren't a lot of dream opponents left. We've seen him in some mediocre matches that weren't all that special. He stopped seeming to care or deliver in the ring in a big way. And, you know, you had the Dean Ambrose debacle, I guess. I think the shine is off. You can debate the pros and cons of what he added, but I think the shine is off enough where you can look and go, man, are they just ready to move on? You know, are they like to sign him and pay him big money at this point? I think there's real diminishing returns compared to where he was when he first came back. So to me, if you can get him on a budget, it's a no-brainer. But you say it's a no-brainer, but some people would say, no, he's taking up space in big matches. He's not, fans don't think he's going to deliver a good match anymore or a good effort. And WWE has damaged him in helping to get Roman Reigns over. The promo last week and what Roman said today, even though the announcers haven't jumped in and joined in, I think he's damaged in the sense that they've labeled him a guy who doesn't even want to be there even when he's there. And I do think the way WWE has built loyalty to the brand, that will stick. And I think that they're preparing for life after Lesnar in a pretty strategic way, which is, let's help Roman get cheered, and if Lesnar leaves, let's have it not sting so much, because we've now got almost half of people in our poll saying, good riddance, let him go. And this is their biggest star.
And here's the thing, right? I think now we've gotten to a point where with the network subscribers, they've almost hit a plateau, right? I don't know if they're going to get any more, but what they will be able to get is hopefully a lot more money for this TV network deal. And that's where Ronda Rousey comes in. Ronda Rousey, as a full-time competitor for WWE, as a full-time performer, is a lot more valuable than, say, Brock Lesnar as very much part-time and having, you know, one-off matches on the network, which have shown has sort of reached a plateau. So I think they've gotten everything they could out of Brock Lesnar. I wouldn't say good riddance. I'd say thank you very much for your service. You've done what we wanted you to do. It's time for us to part ways. And now we get into the Ronda Rousey business and try and get as much money as we can with this network deal, because we've got a big star that's hopefully going to bring in a new audience, especially from a female variety, and then take things from there.
Let's close with James H., who says, are you being paid to give WWE a pass on the Ronda angle? Well, I'll first answer that, no. Stephanie and Hunter haven't done anything they don't always do. Arrogance is not a hard emotion to display or emote, especially if you are really arrogant in real life. You're practically demanding Emmys for them, Wade. Ronda came out grinning like the Joker, which the commentary noted. Why is she happy? She has been disrespected every week. Like Ronda, but she is a natural heel. Refusing interviews, not touching gloves, not giving her opponents respect, even after they earn it. Bragging about her skill set, running away after losing. The bold booking would have seen her as a heel. It's unoriginal, predictable, and lazy, mixing with mediocre acting. This was not tremendous. Don't lower the bar because it's WrestleMania season. Raise it. With respect, I'm a big fan, James H. Jason, your rebuttal to James shooting all over my opinion on Ronda.
Yeah, you got hammered there. Gee, you got buried. No, but look, in fairness to James, I agree with him. I prefer Ronda as a heel. I think she's got so much potential, especially if they bring in, you know, her three friends and they just run roughshod over everyone, and then homegrown organic baby faces have to take them on. Having said that, so this at the beginning when I first did this show, Wade, I am a hardcore fan with a casual fan's mind. And when I watch WWE, I always watch it, I would say, not half full, three quarters full. Okay, so I'm willing to give them an out. Would I have liked to see things done better with her? Absolutely. But I think the thing she has going for her, which will always save her, is that killer look, the credibility. I'm okay with her not acting exactly the way she should. I want to see how this plays out. At the end of the day, she's going to get her arm raised. Hopefully, we move on. Then we might be able to turn her heel. And then let, you know, and then let the shackles off and then go from there. But I think it's just a step-by-step process at this stage.
Yeah, I was in the position of not wanting to see Ronda and a partner against Hunter and Steph, and I thought it was preposterous that Stephanie would even be in the ring with Ronda, and I thought it would just seem like a ego trip and a star where the eye was on getting Hunter and Steph over more than doing what's best for the women on the roster who work full-time. And I still have all those reservations, but this has been good. You can say, well, they're only good at playing arrogant, that it's easy to emote because they're arrogant in real life and it's the easiest emotion to get across. But it's been really good. I mean, I'm sorry. I'm almost uncomfortable with how effective Stephanie is talking about from the perspective that she does about people just doing what they're told to get their paychecks and listen to their boss. And I know people like you want to understand what we go through as bosses, but you have to do what we say for the world to work. I mean, she does it in a way that isn't – not everybody pulls off, and not everybody's in a position to even try to pull it off. So it's just been really good. And Ronda, I think, will have a run as a heel, unless they're just making so much money with her as a face. But I don't mind having her be wronged by the authority at first, and then she can, you know, eventually – I don't know, have an affair with Jason Jordan, and they turn on Kurt Angle, and I don't know. You know, whatever. I know. I mean, we're going to see – either Charlotte as a heel against Ronda as a face, or we're going to see Charlotte as a face against Ronda as a heel. And Nia Jax is being set up strong. I assume she'll have a match with Ronda at some point. It could be with Ronda as a heel because they just turned Jax face. And Asuka's not going heel, I don't think. So, I mean, it just seems like the top opponents for Rousey right now are baby faces. So I think you're going to get that. And I think there's a way to tell that story, and I think they have this mapped out. And I would just say I think everybody's going to get what they want. It just might be in a different order, and they might be ramping up. They want to get past Stephanie having her moment in the spotlight at a WrestleMania with Ronda for all kinds of reasons. And from there, there's a long-term plan for Ronda, and I think everybody's going to get what they want out of Ronda, but just maybe in a different order.
And Wade, just quickly, for the fifth or sixth week in a row, no 205 Live competitors.
I know, yeah. And that's fine. I mean, it really is. I'm fine with that.
So does that mean that you reckon moving forward, they're just going to be exclusive to that network show? They're not going to be introduced to Raw or SmackDown? Is that the way you see it?
That's the way I see it right now. And I think that's fine. you know, I mean, NXT's not on Raw every week. It's still fine. It's a self-contained world. And, yeah, I mean, I think putting 205 Live on Raw was bad for the brand because they weren't on their home turf, and it felt like filler, and people resented it. I think, just like I say, TV tapings for 205 Live should be from a crowd of fans who attended because they want to see the stars of 205 Live. And 205 Live never gets that. So I feel the same way about watching on TV. Let the wrestlers of 205 Live wrestle in front of people who set out to watch that show. They still have the challenge of the show being taped in front of fans who don't want to see it, but or didn't show up to see it, I should say. That wasn't their primary reason, and that's a negative. But I don't think it's that big of a deal. It's a yeah. relatively cheap show to produce, and it gives the network some exclusive content, so why put it in back? I'd rather have no spotlight on me than a spotlight that makes me look weak.
Well, you know, I don't watch it often, but I'm just reading some comments online, and I'm getting the sense that they're starting to get a bit of momentum behind it, and people are starting to say, you know what, you actually have to go and check this out. I think, it seems like a long time ago that Enzo Amore was a champion. I mean, that seems like just such a long time ago. They've got this tournament, getting some momentum behind them, so, hopefully it all turns out well.
Jason, thanks. Always a pleasure talking with you, and we will hopefully do this again very soon.
Not a problem, Wade, and thank you very much to all the listeners. And I just wanted to put this in because I'm a big 90s wrestling fan. I love the throwback that the Revival used tonight, where they used the old Power and Glory finisher, Hercules and Paul Roma.
Yes.
The superplex into the splash. I love seeing that move. Too bad it wasn't efficient, the finisher, but I love seeing that. I thought that was a great little touch.
That's a great observation to add on. Thanks, Jason. Thanks to our listeners. Give us 5 stars in Apple Podcasts if you have a moment, and we'll talk to you tomorrow for SmackDown.